You'd assume that a blind person would want to be able to see. Brian Friel's astonishing play Molly Sweeney explores what happens when a woman has surgery to try to restore her sight. It has been revived by the Irish Repertory Theatre, and the run has been extended through April 10th. It's hard to describe just how moving Geraldine Hughes is in the title role of Molly, and Kieran O'Reilly is terrific as her husband Frank, and they join me now, along with Charlotte Moore, who directed this production. I'm very pleased that they could all join me today. Hi.
Thank you very much.
Thrilled to be here.
Geraldine, what's ironic here is that your character Molly is the only one who doesn't seem to care so much about restoring her sight. Why do you think that is?
I know. It's an extraordinary question I've asked myself a number of times. I think that there is a moment, there is a great moment of realization when she knows that perhaps this might not be a good thing. But she has these two men in her life. I think one reminds her a lot of her father, and the other one is her first and only love, I guess. And so she just goes with it and is encouraged by their hope and their fantasies that this is going to be a terrific thing.
I think it was Stevie Wonder who said that he would be happy. He'd love to have his sight restored for just a moment, but he wouldn't want it to be forever.
Oh, he said
that? Yeah, and I think that there are a fair number of people who have learned to live in that world and are perfectly happy with it. You play Molly with your eyelids half closed so that you can't quite see. Did you do that from the beginning and also tilting your head upwards?
No, there's a story behind that. I actually didn't know what I was going to do, and I got on the train, the one train coming from the theater uptown. I was going home after rehearsal, about 2 weeks into rehearsal, I think it was. And there's a blind residence on 23rd Street. So this woman got on beside me and she was blind. She had a cane and that's how she held her head and that's what she did. And I had a number of stops and I just was so entranced by her. And I thought, that's it. And it was such a gift because she gave it to me in, you know, five stops on the subway. And I thought, there it is. That's how I'll play it. Because, of course, you can play it many different ways.
But it is quite believable.
Oh, so, good. I'm glad.
Kieran, Frank does seem to be almost obsessed with coming up with a cure for Molly's blindness. What is it in his personality that makes it so important for him?
Well, it's a cause. He's been a man of causes all his life. And in his early days, he was out making goat cheese on islands from Iranian goats. He spent other time out saving the whales. And now this beautiful woman who was available to him, blind, that was one of the more exotic things in Ballybeg. Mm-hmm. And it became his cause. And by God, he was going to make this happen.
Whether she wanted it or not.
Right.
Frank's favorite word seems to be fascinating, and he finds so much that is fascinating. I guess he's thirsty for experience and knowledge. Does a word like fascinating help you figure out who your character is?
Oh, it certainly does, yeah. I mean, it seems to indeed punctuate everything he does and everything. I mean, one of the key lines in it is that he read this in a do-it-yourself book. I mean, it's a very dangerous animal, the person.
Charlotte, the third person on the stage, Mr. Rice, Dr. Rice, played wonderfully by Jonathan Hogan, is an ophthalmologist who operates on Molly. He's not here, so you're going to have to talk for him for a moment. He sees this operation as a chance to regain much that he has lost.
Well, he's had a terrible time for the past some odd years, at least 7 years. And he's lost his wife. He's lost his reputation. He's lost his skill. He's lost his everything. He's lost everything. We don't know where he's been, but he may have run a pub in Glasgow, and he may have been in Bolivia. And so he sees this, I think, as a redeeming chance, and he grabs it. He takes it.
Have you wanted to do this play for a while?
Yes, always. I think all of us have wanted to do it since we saw it.
Well, it's interesting because it's not technically demanding. The set is nothing more than a few chairs. And
it can't be anymore.
There are some windows. But I would think this is a very demanding play.
It's a very demanding play, and if you don't get your actors right, you're in big trouble.
Is this the first major revival of Molly Sweeney?
Yes, in the United States, yes. So, there was a recent revival in London, and it's been done here and there, but this is the first major revival here.
When was it originally written?
It's 22 years old.
It was 1994.
94.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'd assume none of you had seen it in early production.
I actually, strangely, saw the very, very, very first performance of this show. I happened to be in Dublin, happened to be going by the theatre, and went in and saw it and met Brian Friel that night. He says, "What are you doing here so early?" He was a little nervous.
He thought that you were applying for a job?
No, he thought we might be interested in bringing it over, and he thought it was a little early in days for to come in and take a view of it. But it was quite wonderful then.
There's no dialogue per se. Rather, there are monologues that the three characters alternate. It's similar in construction to Brian Friel's earlier play, Faith Healer, also to Conor McPherson's Port Authority. And I wonder if this is something that is an Irish construct. Do you know?
Well, it's for me, I think it's a wonderful exploration of the Shanachie tradition, the sort of Irish storyteller. You know, because you have to be able to tell a story and you have to know who you're telling it to. And, you know, you can't rely on other people's reactions on the stage. So as an Irish actor, I think it's very challenging, but it's also a great comfort as well.
But it goes against that old rule, show, don't tell. This is tell. You're talking directly to the audience. All the actors are speaking directly to the audience. And telling the story that way, but it gives us a way to see their differing perspectives.
I wanted to create a world where they all lived, and I didn't want them to speak. Well, they can't speak to one another, but I wanted three voices, three distinct voices in the same world who did not literally touch. And so that world is created up there, I hope.
Would it be hard for these characters to say what they say to each other?
To one another, absolutely. I mean, it would be impossible to open themselves up like that and show what they really feel.
It's sort of like a giant private moment,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, you know? Each of them.
Yeah.
But what about the other side? You speak for a while and you do have a lot of dialogue for a short time. And then you sit quietly while the other actors are doing the same thing. And I'd imagine there's this weird kind of loss of momentum, and then you got to get yourself going again.
Well, Kieran sleeps, right? You do naps, right?
I most certainly don't.
Just kidding.
I think we all listen very carefully to what the others are saying and sort of live with that moment and become a part of that moment, because you're about to jump in from your own perspective from there. So you have to take off and almost say, okay, well, that's how she remembered it. It's not necessarily how I remembered it.
They withdraw, sort of, but they're not gone.
No. Yeah. It's a brilliant question, actually, because it's very difficult. It was a part of as an actor that I forgot until we really went into performance. I was like, wait a second. You know, you have to – it's absolutely about listening.
Yeah, you have to stay quiet but engaged.
Absolutely, yeah.
And just going back to the show, Don't Tell, I mean, one of the things about this is tell by telling you show, because I don't think there's a set designer or a scenic designer who could design what your imagination can design, so that everything that's being told in that and told in such lyricism and beauty and you can just imagine that more than anybody could ever actually. I would hate to see the movie of this.
Yeah, but it's more like radio, actually, because the audience fills in so much. But I wonder what rehearsals were like. What were the hardest things to get right?
Well, Charlotte is just terrible to work with. The Irish rep. I'm telling you, Charlotte and Kieran run the Irish rep, and I have never had a more glorious rehearsal time. You have tea and biscuits, and then you work, and we get to tell these stories. And it was just, for me, it was just extraordinary. It was brilliant.
We examined her life, and it's amazing.
No, it was really, it was a lot of work, though, because a lot of it was learning the lines at the beginning. It's a lot to learn. It's a lot to take in.
There's that celebratory question from everybody who isn't an actor. How do you learn those lines?
Yeah, but I never asked that question. But it is usually actors talk about the importance of the interaction because they're bouncing off of other actors. And that is denied you in a play like this.
Yeah. It was also, we were fascinated by the source that inspired the play. It was Oliver Sacks in his essay, To See or Not to See.
Brian Friel rarely acknowledges that was his inspiration.
And he was there, Dr. Sacks, came to see it and loved it.
He said that article was about what happens to people who've been blind since childhood and then unexpectedly gain some sight in middle age. Do you think that part of the problem for Molly is that she's lived half a life as she is and that's the only way she knows the world?
Absolutely. I mean, I think she's so happy. I mean, I try to explore that joy, like Charlotte and I talked about that a lot during rehearsals, you know, play that joy, play that hope until you can't play it anymore. And it's when the vision appears, as it were, and the colours and movement and all that stuff, it just becomes too much for her because that's not where she lives.
Well, she says that she gets more pleasure, more delight from swimming than sighted people can ever get.
Yeah. Oh, I had this extraordinary thing really quick. I'll tell this really. There was a woman that came to the show on Sunday and she talked to me afterwards and she has retinitis pigmentosa and she's completely blind and she was this beautiful woman. God, I'd love if she was listening. But she came up to me afterwards and she said, you know, I can't see you, but I saw you on the stage. And she said, I swim. And when I swim, I feel it on my toenails.
Oh, that's wonderful.
She was the most beautiful woman. Couldn't believe it.
I think we should put that line into the play.
Yes, call Brian immediately.
My guests are Geraldine Hughes, Kieran O'Reilly and Charlotte Moore. We're talking about Molly Sweeney, which is playing at the Irish Repertory Theatre at 132 West 22nd Street between 6th and 7th Avenues. It's just been extended through April 10th. And if you want more information about tickets and the like, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org. The play makes us all wonder about what seeing really means and how so many sighted people are actually blind in their ways. But it doesn't come out and baldly say that.
No, but we've all thought about it a lot and talked about it a lot. I mean, it's a mysterious gift, isn't it, to be able to see or not.
Well, people who can see worry about going blind. But if you're blind, of course, that's a whole other issue. How does playing Molly affect your vision when you're not on stage?
Doesn't she have beautiful eyes?
I am actually really blind in real life. Not really blind, but I wear contact lenses and, you know, so I thought about maybe doing it without the contact lenses in, but then I just thought that was very foolish because I'd just fall on the stage. But it's fine. I mean, as soon as I leave the stage, it's fine. But when I'm on the stage, it can become quite actually unnerving because I don't really see very well because my eyes are half closed.
Now, what is it like to play in a Brian Friel play? Karen, you were in Aristocrats and Philadelphia, Here I Come. Are his words really good to play?
Oh, they're wonderful. I mean, they're very, very close to me. Where I come from County Cavan in Ireland, and it's not that far from Donegal. And Ballybeg, which is the Irish word for Ballybeug, which means small town. I came from a very small town there. So all the characters and all the people that he describes, I just know them in my toenails.
Does he give you a lot of direction?
Brian Friel?
Yeah.
No, I don't, not at all. No, I think...
he trusts the actors to figure it out?
Yes, he does. There's not a lot of program notes like Shaw would put in or anything like that. It's basically, he just gives you the words and you just say them.
And Geraldine, you were in Translations. You got a Tony nomination for that.
Well, I didn't. The show did. Oh. Yeah, Best Revival. God, I wish. No. but that was brilliant experience. First time I'd ever done Friel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Have you done any other Friels at the Irish Rep?
Philadelphia, Here I Come, and Aristocrats, and
history.
Yeah, and making history. I forgot about that one. That's and Kieran was Red
Hugh O'Donnell.
Red Hugh O'Donnell. We dyed his hair red. It was wonderful.
Did you really?
Yes.
That was when I had hair.
there's an American connection for all of you here. Geraldine, you're originally from West Belfast in Northern Ireland, but you graduated from UCLA's School of Theatre, Film and Television.
I know. How did a wee girl do
Why
that?
Why did you come here when the Abbey Theatre and that great tradition is so powerful in Ireland?
Well, I grew up in West Belfast and during the Troubles and sort of in the middle of it, so I wasn't exactly a happy childhood. So when I was 13, I was cast in a NBC movie of the week called Children in the Crossfire. And as soon as I did that, I thought, well, that's a good way to get out of here. So when I was 18... it's a long story short, I got a private scholarship to go to UCLA and I left, which I can't believe I did now, you know, almost 22 years later. But I left and I went to school there and have lived in the States ever since.
You premiered your solo play Belfast Blues in Los Angeles.
Yes,
you
wrote I did.
It?
I did, yes. Yes, I wrote it. And I know, listen, it wasn't my idea. I would never dream of writing a story about myself and then talking about it on the stage. But I ended up doing it, and it was really a huge success. And, you know, is a reason for everything else that's happened.
You've also played on screen opposite two pretty brawny guys, Clint Eastwood and Gran Torino, yeah. Sylvester Stallone and Rocky Balboa.
Yes, I know. Can you imagine? And I learned to say, go to the store and get a Coke and a hoagie.
But you've gone back to Ireland.
No, I live in New York now. Yeah. I've never gone back to Ireland to live.
Well, the play has been extended, as I said, but you're going to be leaving very soon, aren't you?
I know, tragically and unfortunately.
Oh, she has a wonderful opportunity.
I'm going to be appearing in Jerusalem on Broadway with Mark Rylance and company. Mm. So I'm going to leave Molly a little early because rehearsals are in London. So I have to go do that.
And you have another actress coming in,
Simone Kirby. Yes, with Brian Friel's OK and Sending Love, who's just done the play in Leicester in England. And he proved, and so we're bringing her over here.
Yeah, it was another wonderful story was that she just happened to have closed in the play to absolutely astonishing reviews in London. And she was happened to be available and ready to come.
And she knows the lines.
She knows the lines.
God help us, yes.
But Karen, looking at your credits, it's like going through a history of Irish dramaturgy. what is it about the Irish and theater?
Well, again, I would probably say it might hark back to the Shanachie and the telling the story, that's an all-important thing. And even when they leave the country and become expatriates like Oscar Wilde or Shaw, that they still hold on to that tradition of telling a story. I think any good piece of theater is about a story. If it doesn't have a good story, who cares, no matter whether it's an abstract piece or not. And I think that the strength in that is the telling of the story.
So we wind up with Beckett going to France, but he's...
Right.
And Joyce going all over the world, but they still are great storytellers. Edna O'Brien lives in London.
It's fantastic.
But she's an Irish writer.
It's fantastic. Like Waiting for Godot or Waiting for Godot, which means waiting for eternity. You know, I mean, it's what a great story that is, just about two people waiting for somebody to show up.
So, Charlotte, you have, as artistic director of the Irish Rep, so much wonderful theater to choose from. How do you decide what to put in each season?
I have to tell you, we've done a hell of a lot of them. It's not easy to choose a new play or even an old one because we've done them. We've done about, how many have we done, Kieran?
100.
About 100. I mean, and so no matter how much I'd like to do another Sean O'Casey and bring it to everybody, we've done them a couple of times. It's tough. It's tough choosing.
And then you've cast yourself in a few of them.
Do you have
a good Irish accent?
No. I deplore a phony Irish accent. It's very, very tough for me to listen to. It's awful, awful. And everybody who comes in tells me, I have a perfect Irish accent. Well, they don't. They just don't.
I want to be Charlotte when I grow up.
Well, how do you keep your Irish accent going?
Oh, my God.
Because,
well, like,
I know
so
when you go home.
Leonard. Well, I mean, I'm like so totally American.
I know when British people go back to England, they're always told, you sound so American, although they sound very British to us here.
Yeah.
Same is true with Irish people.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely a Yankee Irish accent now. I mean, you
know. I went in to do a commercial one time for an Irish soap, and I was told that my accent wasn't strong enough, so I had to go, two deodorants, two, and a fine, fresh scent.
That was you, Karen.
That was me.
So, Charlotte, what's coming up? Since you don't have any more plays that you can do.
Well, I'll do something. We've extended until April the 10th, and then we're thinking about a secret musical, and we're thinking about a secret Irish-British author, which I have no intention of telling you.
But meanwhile, we have this wonderful production of Molly Sweeney, which is, as we said, extended until April 10th, although on March 9th, Geraldine Hughes will be leaving, and we will have Simone Kirby joining. My great thanks to Geraldine Hughes, Kieran O'Reilly, and Charlotte Moore for coming by and talking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you very much.
You're the best.